Hello, and welcome to the Angelist India Radio. Through these conversations, we're taking you inside the minds of great investors, experienced founders, and talented experts. Angelist India pioneered new concepts in startup fundraising and investing for India. You can find out more about us on angel.co/India. Let's dive in.
Hi, this is Prakhar Agarwal, your host for today's episode of Angelist India Radio. And my guest for this episode is Alok Bajpai,
co-founder of Exigo, India's most loved AI-based travel app.
Welcome, Alok.
Hi, Prakhar. Glad to be on your show.
Thank you so much. Alok, I was seeing a talk at a startup event you gave back in 2012 titled 50 Shades of Orange. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I remember that.
Where you spoke about how you began Exigo and the various shades of a founder's journey. I'm sure 2020 must have added a few more shades to that journey. I just want to start by asking you, firstly, how are you doing personally? How has 2020 been for you? And pretty much, you know, how have things been for Exigo in this time when, you know, you could say that 2020 pretty much uprooted the travel industry?
Yeah, I think it's been one of the darker shades, so to say, in 2020, right? This was one year that nobody could have ever planned for. I think if you talk about personally, you know, I've been through a lot of personal crisis in this year as well. I actually was COVID positive myself in December. And prior to that, I lost a relative to COVID, and I lost a very close friend and colleague to cancer. So it was a very stressful year. Of course, on the business side, also things were not great because, you know, once the lockdown was announced, obviously there was a full standstill on all travel, train, flight, everything. Nothing was running, right? So so for a couple of months, we were literally down to a near zero revenue. And I think, you know, though we've documented that moment of time very well in many places, but I can tell you that, you know, it was definitely one of the most stressful periods for me and Rajneesh, my co-founder. We went through many sleepless nights. You know, I do remember the stats that there were these 2 weeks where my average sleep time was 4 hours or less. So, wow. And it was because there was so much uncertainty, right? This was just around the time of the lockdown. Like, there was so much uncertainty about when things would resume, would they resume, and in what shape and form would travel come back. There were a lot of predictions being made that things won't come back for 2 years, 1 year, right? And in those kind of scenarios, it became very hard to imagine how would we survive because, you know, we didn't have cash to last that long if there was zero revenue, right? Most startups do not plan for zero revenue scenarios, right? They plan for maybe some reduction in revenue. And therefore, you know, we were kind of in a situation where, you know, you had to look for answers without knowing the variables, right? Because you didn't know how long this would last. You didn't know the intensity of the impact. And you just had to take decisions basis your gut feeling at the end of the day because, you know, no science was able to tell us how COVID would play out, right? The only thing the past had taught us was that it wouldn't be like a couple of months or 3 months. You know, it would have an impact that would be longer because all epidemics in the past have lasted for a year or two, right? So we literally went with a 6 to 12 month view saying that, look, if we got to survive this, we have to plan for that long. And, you know, the team made immense sacrifices. We all came together and figured out the only way for us to survive without letting go people was that if everybody took a moderate to high pay cut, right? And we figured out that most people, actually everybody was willing to support at that time. And we, you know, that's how we survived those 4 or 5 months, which were very tough. I mean, the first couple of months, there was zero revenue or close to zero. And then even when things resumed, you know, the confidence wasn't there the first couple of months. It was only migrants returning to their hometowns. that kind of travel or utility or emergency kind of travel, which was happening for the, you know, first couple of months when things resumed in June, end of May, June, July, right? So it was only end of July that we could see that, yes, things would come back. And, you know, some things that were already, some like flights and trains that already come back to 25-30% plus of their levels. We could see that the trajectory from here would be month-on-month growth, right? So it was that time where we brought back the salaries, gave everybody in our team ESOPs to compensate for the, you know, salary cuts, and started to, you know, kind of slowly get less stressed about the situation, more about, you know, let's face the future. The COVID world is going to be around for a while, and, you know, we have to be prepared on how to help people travel in the in-COVID situation, because post-COVID is a very long time away.
Yeah. And a little bit further on that, what are some of the early travel trends that are looking like in 2021? Is there some sort of resurgence? And how are things looking in the short to medium term going forward?
Yeah, so I think, you know, when I look at January 21 or even December, right, you know, it's actually played out much better than what any of us could have expected. It seems like by November, December, people did develop a sense of comfort to get on a flight for a leisure trip. You would have probably heard that places like Goa and Maldives, it was difficult to find a good property, you know, during the New Year's season. And even in January, I'm hearing like there's still a lot of tourists in Goa, and you know, the prices in Maldives are very close to pre-COVID levels. If I look at the demand, right, so train demand right now on reserve travel is already at pre-COVID or above levels. And the reason is because unreserved or passenger kind of trains are not running. There are very few passenger trains running. So some of the demand spillover has come into reserved. So reserved has actually gotten to higher than pre-COVID levels slightly. If I look at flights, flights are still between 60-65% of pre-COVID levels, right? So it's better than where one would have expected, because we kind of planned for a 50% scenario. But I think the confidence is coming back in the shape and form of people saying that, look, this thing's going to be around, you know, cases are declining. As long as, you know, we have protection and we are careful, you know, we can travel around. We can't just sit at home for a year or more. Right. So I think we are seeing that fatigue. We are seeing that wanting to go out and explore the world rather than just, you know, sit at your home. And we are also seeing people moving to other places to work. So that's a big trend, you know, staycation or people basically saying I can a workation. Right. Basically saying that I can move to Manali and work from there. Right. Or the hills. Right. What have you. So so that is also kind of bringing a new kind of demand into the market, and longer term stays, right? 3-4 week long stays, etc. So I just think that, look, it will be a long road for travel, but one thing is certain, that, you know, most of the pundits who kind of projected a very negative scenario were wrong. I think humans are a lot more resilient than what we thought.
Yeah. Right. And I'm hoping that travel industry will be like the biggest benefactor when things do get back to normalcy. Obviously, we don't know when that time is. But I'm pretty sure that things on the horizon will look much better.
Oh, yes. So I think if you look at the recovery, right, so all other sectors have already come very close to pre-COVID levels or beyond that in the economy. Yeah. But travel, travel, aviation, and, you know, hospitality will be the last ones. But that means the next 12 months are going to be very exciting, because that's where all the recovery and bounce back will happen. But what else will happen is the pent-up demand or the, you know, the revenge travel, great travel bounce back, whatever you want to call it. That's for real, right? The moment the borders open with some sort of immunity passport concept, you know, I think we'll see unprecedented boom in travel, which is what happened in Asia after SARS, if you recall. We will see some kind of, we are projecting like maybe 30-50% higher than pre-COVID. A spike could happen when things are back to normal. The only thing we don't know is when that will be.
Yes, no, absolutely makes sense. And I also want to congratulate you. I mean, it's just by chance that we're recording this podcast on the day that you announced the acquisition of Confirm Ticket. Please tell us a little bit about this acquisition and what strength does this acquisition bring to Ixigo? And also a second part, to help the fellow founder community, what are some of the critical factors while thinking of an M&A opportunity in the startup world, right? What would you recommend? What are the sort of the starting pieces and some of the critical factors that founders should be contemplating while, thinking of such decisions?
Sure. So, look, I think this acquisition was actually a way to figure out how we could go after the train opportunity in a larger way, right? So, trains is a very large segment of travel in India. Most people do not realize this, but almost 90% of Indians have never set foot in an airport in their life, right? And for them, travel means getting on a train. Right. Therefore, like there's about 25 million trips that used to happen pre-COVID every day on Indian Railways, right? Across, long distance, suburban, all of that. So when you look at the size of the opportunity, it's a very exciting, large market, which is still, which still has a lot of scope to come online. Most of unreserved is offline. People queue up and buy tickets still for unreserved travel. Reserved, yes, indeed. Thanks to IRCTC and partners such as us and Confirm Ticket, it started moving online, and I think there is still immense scope to improve the customer experience for a train traveler, right? Because there were not that many apps and utilities that could help them along the journey, whether it was about guiding them about whether the train is on time or PNR status or predictions about whether your PNR will confirm or many other such use cases. If there's no direct train, suggesting stitching together a couple of trains or a train and a bus. So those are the gaps that companies like us or Confirm Ticket were filling. In this particular case, what we liked was that the team was very committed to this space. We shared the same passion about going after the next billion users, going to tier 2, 3, 4 markets. And they were operating in a very frugal, very disciplined and very focused manner on this problem, largely around product and growth hacking, right? And a very small team, they had raised just 1.5 crores of funding, right? And grown to, 21 crore of revenue and profitable, right, last year. So I think they've done a fab job at building this small startup focused around train use cases, which fit very nicely with our thesis and some of stuff that we were doing. And we thought that the space is large enough to have, multiple brands go after different parts of the market, etc. So we've, even though we've acquired them, the two companies are going to run independently. We are, making sure that the founding team and the team there, is going to remain committed and join us in this journey, build something bigger. We've done a equity swap, equity part of the arrangement as well. It's not just a cash payout, right? Mostly, so we want to build this for the long term because we think that this part of the market is just getting started, right? So if you look at the potential of how many Indians can book online train tickets and train utility services versus how many are doing today, there is a 100x upside actually. So I think from that perspective, where we are, it's still very early in the journey. And we think that, by virtue of this joining hands, we can attack the larger problem together in a much better way.
Absolutely makes sense. I think it's a very exciting opportunity. And like you rightly mentioned, the target addressable market is so huge, right? It's pretty much every person with a smartphone. And so few of them are using online channels to book railway tickets that obviously the opportunity is huge. So really congratulations on that. And I just want to shift gears a little bit and talk to you about the Twitter thread that you put out yesterday, where you talked about, transitioning from a deep discount focused marketplace to a full-blown OTA. So for starters, can you please tell us a little bit about the difference in the two business models and whether this helped you sort of ride the tide of 2020? And what are sort of some of the unique challenges, if there are any, in both the cases?
Sure. So, Prakhar, actually, there's three business models here in travel that we've gone through the transition on. We started as a meta search, which would be more like a price comparison or a travel search engine website, right? In the desktop era when we started, we were searching, comparing the airline sites, OTAs, you know, allowing people to click, get redirected and buy. Now, when mobile happened, we realized that meta doesn't work because it's mobile interfaces of the airlines or some of these partners are very clunky. And also, the whole redirection thing really breaks down, right? I mean, it doesn't really work that well. Opening a new tab is easy on a browser, but in a mobile, you have a new browser window and then you kind of get lost in the process, right? Once the app ecosystem came around, it became obvious that, look, we would have to offer a more deeper end-to-end integrated experience. And the first step we did was convert it from a meta to a marketplace where we said, fine, you know, if you were going through Ixigo to a Cleartrip or someone else, you know, and earlier if we were redirecting you, you don't need to be redirected. You can complete the transaction with that brand inside our own app, right? With a facilitated booking or an instant booking kind of model where the ticketing and the payments would still be handled by them. Now, the issue with that was that, look, we couldn't control the customer experience as well as we wanted to because, for any issues that the customer faced with respect to payments or with respect to tickets, with respect to cancellations, I mean, Ixigo was pretty much helpless in that. Though, you know, it was great utility because you could compare everyone, find the best prices, etc., and, you know, get the best deals. But, you know, the downside was that we could not deliver on a customer experience promise of being the best out there. Even though our user experience was vastly superior, even though, you know, like many other innovations that we had done, were quite unique, right? But we could not leverage those from a transactional standpoint, right? Because also we didn't have any customer data as a result of not being a transactional assets, right? So we could not even, let's say, if you had a fare alert set and we wanted to retarget you and tell you that the fares have dropped, you know, it was impossible for us to do that in that paradigm unless we kind of knew a lot more about what you were interested in buying, right? So we decided to move down the transactional funnel more and become fully transactional, become an OTA ourselves. And one of the reasons we did that was that we realized that from a traffic perspective also, we had grown quite a lot. Like by 2019, when we looked at our traffic and we compared it to some of the existing OTA players, we were like, look, we are as big as them or maybe bigger than some of them in traffic, right? So there is no reason why we cannot fulfill the transaction ourselves, but it was not an easy thing. We had to build a lot of stuff which typically requires a lot, you know, many people and operational complexity in the business. But in our case, we chose to build more tech around it to solve it. And we built it in a record time of like four months in 2019. And we moved gears, became an OTA ourselves. So by becoming an OTA, we are able to deliver a full-blown customer experience. And we are able to compete not just on price, because you can only compete on price for so long, right? The moment somebody else drops their price, you cannot always keep matching that. But I think where we want to compete is on experience, is on customer service, and is on delivering superior product innovations that are based on data and AI. So we've been a big believer on AI, invested a lot on artificial intelligence use cases like customer service automation and even fare intelligence, making sure people get notified when fares drop, etc. So we've done a lot of work there. So that's why, I mean, we wanted to own the end-to-end experience that a traveler goes through pre-booking, during booking, post-booking, because that is the only way we could build a differentiated, a brand when it comes to, enabling transactions and utility, right? Because otherwise, if you think about it, every OTA might feel the same to everyone. But, end of the day, what matters is the customer experience we are able to deliver far superior.
Makes sense, which is why I think we are all a big fan of what Ixigo does. And one last question from my end. So from your journey and what you define as, let's say, the unicorn playbook, right, panning out in India, how easy or difficult is it to build a profitable internet company? And what are some of the things that you'd recommend every founder should focus on to maintain a healthy P&L? And, you know, a little extension to that, some of the growth hacks and marketing hacks that you may have employed at Ixigo that it might have given you like the best ROI.
Yeah, sure. So, look, I think there are three big learnings from our journey to date that I would like want every entrepreneur to understand. You know, I think it's very easy to get carried away by all the noise in the ecosystem, right? By news of companies raising X million dollars or news of, you know, someone claiming to be launching XYZ, right? I think what is very important is as entrepreneurs, as founders, you know, people keep their eyes and ears close to the market, to the customer, and, you know, spend most of their time on those problems that enhance, you know, the customer journey and the customer experience. You know, everything else flows from there, right? If you think about it, whether it is product, whether it is marketing, whether it is, you know, revenue, valuation, you know, ideally everything, the starting point has to be, are we able to deliver, you know, something that is vastly superior and which can actually change fundamentally, you know, something about, you know, how someone's time or money is being utilized, right? And I think, you know, most entrepreneurs get a little more carried away by that noise at some point. I'm guilty of it as well. Like there's always been points where you start playing the game by other people's rules. But yeah, you got to come back to the fundamentals. And I think, you know, obviously black swan events like COVID have forced a lot of companies to reset themselves and come back to these fundamentals, you know, more out of compulsion. But, yeah, you know, end of the day, if you see, you know, if you build your company largely on the premise that, look, there has to be a real value proposition that people come for, and then there has to be a way to eventually make money from that, right? I mean, if these two things don't hold, you know, I've not seen a successful business globally, right, which can actually remain successful forever without doing these two things, right? But I think we get carried away by the noise and at times start focusing on things which may not matter in the long term, right? And everyone's guilty to that. But as a founder, I think if you can avoid those distractions, keep focusing on solving the core problem, you know, talking to your customers, understanding their pain areas, solving them relentlessly, you know, hiring the right people, you know, making sure that people understand how to treat your customers right. You know, I think these are more valuable things in that culture that you build over time, right? The second thing I want to talk about is how do you market yourself is also very important, because people assume you have to spend millions of dollars to build a brand and market yourself, right? If you look at, you know, our journey and you compare it to, you know, other players in the space and the amounts of money people have spent on traditional media, Bollywood, and, you know, whatnot, you know, it seems impossible that today we are the most downloaded app in the country by a factor of probably, you know, like 2x compared to the next brand in the space, right? And the reason right now is that, look, if you've built your brand organically for product and word of mouth, right, it's the most defensible moat that you have, right? Because that moat is, I mean, end of the day, if you're not able to get to that benchmark, irrespective of how much money I'm going to pour into marketing, right, the day I stop that, you know, you will come back to your organic rate of growth, which may not be a very high rate of growth, right? But if your organic rate of growth is good and you spend money on marketing, you can accelerate it, right? It's a good reason to spend. So you need to set very high thresholds on what your organic rate of growth needs to be. And to do that, you know, product is the key. Like if you are able to build a great product, get the word of mouth going, you know, great UX, you know, sometimes just the speed or the, you know, customer service efficacy, these things become talking points, right? And people do look at that. The other thing there is empathy, right? So if you have a lot of customer empathy in your team, in your customer service team, in your product team, you will react faster to customer situations. So, you know, so I think fundamentally, you know, marketing for me is amplification of all these things. It's not the primary way to build your brand. The primary way is to build the best product or service experience, you know, which people want to rave about or talk about. It's the harder problem. That doesn't happen overnight. That takes years. And then, you know, you can amplify it with spends. And also, if you want to amplify with spends, one way to do it is through very, inexpensive, you know, you create videos and you, which are related to what you do, informative, fun, you know, useful. You must have seen what our content marketing team, you know, Ashish Chopra and the rest of the team actually, you know, we churn out like tons of videos. Many of them actually do go viral and millions of people see that. We figured out that, you know, if we were to reach that many people, you know, using, let's say, TV or print, you know, we would have spent like $20 to $30 million every year. But we save that money by actually building these videos in-house almost for free, right? So I think that's one way you can compete with incumbents when you don't have access to that sort of funding. And most startups don't, right? So you got to figure out these growth hacks which don't need a lot of money and which can still deliver like faster growth than the incumbents. And then, of course, there's your app search optimization and search engine optimization. And, you know, those are the best friends of any startup because these are free again. Free but hard. Free but very long term, right? But it's worth spending your time in the early days on these things, right? And the third thing I want to talk about is really the team and culture, right? So at every stage of growth, right from the first hire till now, I think that's the only one thing that can make or break a company, right? You know, everything else, like even what you do, what you build, you know, the market you play in, you can change all that, right? I mean, you can pivot into multiple directions. But, you know, you have the team that you build, right? And right from the choice of co-founder to the choice of your first few employees to as you scale, you know, the leaders and middle managers you kind of groom or you bring in from outside. I think those choices matter a lot in the destiny of any company, right? And so, you know, not making compromises as you scale, as you hire, making sure that you're only going for A talent, you know, making sure that you identify cultural misfits early and making sure that you have always transparent and, you know, honest communication going between the team, right? Especially in times of crisis, because bad news needs to travel faster, actually, right? I think those things are very important in any culture to build the right alignment with what you're doing. So I think that's one area where thankfully, you know, like people have been supportive and treated us, you know, as much as family as we treated them. And, you know, we've been lucky to kind of have a culture where people don't mind sharing what they're thinking openly because we don't have that much of hierarchical thinking, set in. And, you know, like anyone can challenge anybody else's decision. And we are very transparent. It's like every quarter we do a deep all hands meet where we share almost everything that's going on. And during COVID, we are doing it even more frequently, right? So I think just being upfront, being empathetic, being more human, essentially, because, you know, end of the day, we can't build anything alone. So you know, I think that really matters. So having a culture that values people, that trusts people really matters.
Absolutely. Thank you, Alok, for taking out the time to speak to us. And congratulations again on the confirmed ticket acquisition. I want to thank you for your continued candor on all the social media platforms that you so frequently, you know, put out your journey, not just the good bits, even the, you know, the bad bits and the, you know, things are shaping out for the travel industry back in 2020 as well. Sure. There are so many people who draw inspiration from you, from your journey and, you know, everything that you share. Thank you so much for doing this and wish you all the best for Ixigo's journey and now for Confirm Ticket's journey as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Prakhar. It was great to be on your show and, you know, keep up the good work in documenting journeys of many other such folks. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Alok.